Good afternoon. This is Randy Christman, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'm joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Julie Fedorchek. This is an informal hearing. We're doing an informal hearing on Dakota Natural Gas application. It is, but by the way, today is October 11th, 2023, and it's about 1:33. And this is case PU-23-299, 23-300, and 23-301. We'll just go around, everybody state your name into the recording for the record.
Victor Shook with PSC staff.
Good afternoon, Christine Anderson here with Dakota Natural Gas. I'm the corporate attorney licensed in Minnesota, but I also handle regulatory affairs in both Minnesota and North Dakota.
Okay, thank you. And also Matt doing our IT today. I don't have any opening comments. Do you, Sherry?
No, I do not.
Julie, it's portfolio? Yeah. It's your portfolio, so I will turn it over to you. But I first want to emphasize that this is an informal hearing, so it involves only undisputed facts. If we get into any disputed issues, we'll have to wrap it up and issue a notice of hearing. And so the applicant goes first here. I'll turn it over to you.
I'm sorry, I just need clarification. I thought it was just on 300 and 301.
299 is a jurisdictional determination for a pipeline segment. That one I know Jack is handling. I don't know the status of that one off the top of my head, but we just wanted to kind of keep it open where we can talk about any of the three.
Okay. If we need to. Okay. So, very good. Thank you, Christine, for being here today. Victor, do you guys have a preference for how we go through these? Christine, did you want to make any presentation? Or do we want to go like case by case? What are your recommendations?
I've went through the filings. I'm satisfied with everything that's been provided. If Christine's interested in doing a presentation or just a kind of a quick summary, that would satisfy my needs. Certainly if you all have questions that we need to delve into, we can do that as well.
And then do we want to go with the public service and convenience and public convenience and necessity and the tariff or in that
yep.
just combined or how do you want to?
Yeah, I would think the public convenience and necessity first probably makes sense and then go into the tariff changes
okay,
as a result
perfect.
Of that.
So, Christine, do you have any opening? Do you want to provide any sort of opening comments? Do you want to summarize? How would you like to proceed?
Chair Christman, Commissioner Fedorchek, I'm certainly happy to defer to the Commission's preference in that regard. I can make opening remarks if you'd like me to. Otherwise, we can just launch into it, and I can answer any questions that anyone has.
Sure. Why don't you just, to get started, provide sort of your opening pitch or summary of what you guys are doing, what you're asking for, and then we can go from there.
Thank you. Chair Christman, Commissioners, Dakota Natural Gas is proposing another to bring service to another unserved area, and it pleases me greatly to be here to be able to tell you that. This time, we're looking at bringing service to the communities of Larimore and Arvilla. This is a little bit different project than the other projects the Commission has considered from DNG in the past. You will recall that in 2019, our first project as a new company here was to bring natural gas to the community of Drayton. We were before the commission in 2019. We brought it into service for the 2021 heating season. The following year, we brought service to the Hillsboro and Mayville communities in Trail County. We followed that up a year later with service in the Portland area. This project, assuming that we can get approval and move through the process quickly, we intend to bring into service for the 2024-25 heating season. We may start construction yet this year, weather permitting, assuming that we receive the requisite approvals from the commission and permitting approvals. Alternatively, we'll be shovel ready as soon as weather permits in the spring. But our plan is to have it in service for next year. Another difference is that our gas supplier this time is different. This time, we'll be taking gas from Xcel near Amarardo, which is kind of near the Air Force Base. And you'll recall that our other projects we actually picked up in Viking in Minnesota and received service area determinations from FERC and came across the river. In that regard, because of this unique posturing, we would really like to thank Xcel for partnering with us and helping work with us to develop a contract that can make this economic. In addition to that, the project wouldn't be feasible without the recently enacted property tax exemption for 15 years from the ad valorem tax for new systems, and we appreciate very much the legislative efforts and the testimony of everybody involved, including the commission, to bring that bill to fruition. The areas in North Dakota that remain unserved, and currently there are, I think the last estimate was 366 communities, soon to be 364. those communities are likely to stay unserved, absent creative financial proposals, because all the areas that are economically viable to serve have already been cherry-picked. And so with that exemption from the ad valorem tax for the first 15 years of a new system, that goes a long way to make a new system economically viable. But that alone isn't enough, and there are a series of dominoes. A second domino in this case was to find an appropriate source of gas at a cost that could make the project workable, and that came from Xcel. The third domino we'll talk about when we get to the next case, which is the tariff modification that we're requesting. But altogether, that allows us to come to you and request a certificate of public inconvenience and necessity for the Larimore and our Villa areas. Our proposed project would be a little over 13 miles in total. It'll be about 13 and a quarter. We'll pick up odorized gas at Amarardo, run it through, the whole system is HDPE pipe. We'll run it to the area near our villa. And then from there, we'll serve via distribution in our villa, also run through the Larimore, and then serve via distribution in the city of Larimore. The community is very excited and has fully embraced the option to have natural gas. In fact, Mayor Elfman from Larimore has filed comments in support of the project in both the public convenience and necessity and tariff cases, because they've been consolidated for comment and hearing. The city of Larimore has committed to using gas. The school district in Larimore plans to. In fact, they have a minimum use agreement in front of the board that I think may have been considered at last night's meeting, but I'm not certain about that. The nursing home in Larimore is also entertaining a minimum use agreement, and it is currently in their corporate offices being reviewed. There's a grain elevator in our villa that also has committed to a minimum use agreement. And so people are excited about this. It brings another energy option to those communities that they don't have. The four questions that the commission needs to answer in considering whether to issue the certificate are whether there's a need for service, whether DNG has the technical, financial, and managerial capacity and is fit and able to provide service, what the effect will be on other similarly situated utilities in the area, and whether the service is adequate. Well, we know there's a need for service because there isn't any. There's no natural gas there. Certainly, DNG has the technical, financial, and managerial ability to provide the service. You've seen what we can do in the communities that we serve so far. Our financial information was submitted to the commission in trade secret form, and we're good at what we do. We can provide this at the cost that we estimate and bring this essential service to these communities. There really isn't an effect on other local utilities because there aren't any natural gas providers providing service. And the service will be adequate because we've designed the service to distribute everywhere in the local community that we can, and we'll be prepared to extend service to anyone who requests it. If anybody who's significantly off the line would request service at some point in the future, our tariff has reasonable main extension requirements that you know, we'll obviously follow. And if a contribution in aid is required, we keep that as minimal as possible. So with that, I would respectfully request that when it comes time for the commission to vote, which obviously isn't today, that it grant our certificate of public convenience and necessity so we can bring gas to Larimore and our villa. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Christine. That was a great, great summary. And appreciate you laying out kind of the key components of making these projects work in the small communities that haven't already been served. Can you, what you mentioned some, but what permits do you still need locally to make this happen?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, our permitting specialist has not started actually applying for permits for the line of construction because we don't want to put a cart before the horse in terms of starting to apply for permits before we know we have commission approval. Because if all of the pieces, which really there were four, right? So the tax exemption, gas supply, the tariff revision, and of course the certificate. If those pieces didn't all come together, the project doesn't work without all of them. So once we have those approvals, then he'll start requesting permits. We've got a materials order ready. The button just has to be pushed to place the materials order. And we'll start working with materials that we already have in stock and available. But there are always permits involved with, you know, what townships you go through, what roads you on. Sometimes they're county permits, sometimes they're state permits. Everything we anticipate will run predominantly through the public right-of-way, so we don't anticipate substantial easement work. There may be a place or two that we need to have some private easements obtained, but we don't anticipate anything problematic in that regard.
Okay. And then can you speak about the gas supply a little bit? I know there's, you know, these aren't huge users, so, but it feels like a lot. This is coming from Viking. It's through XL, but they get it from Viking, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. What's your understanding about the availability of gas on Viking? Is that expandable, or are we reaching the end of the, or near the end of the capacity on that line to serve new projects?
Well, I don't know everything about Xcel's portfolio and where it brings gas, so I can tell you that my experience is predominantly more when we're looking for capacity on the Minnesota side or when we're looking for capacity like we were a few years ago to bring it across. The pipelines, being able to secure firm capacity with any long-term commitment is very, very difficult. Capacity on the major pipelines, Viking, Northern Natural, which is another one of the major pipelines that a lot of gas from Minnesota is picked up on, is hard to come by. And when there is an availability of capacity or somebody releases, it gets snapped up very quickly. I can tell you, for example, that recently one of our Minnesota affiliates had an opportunity to pick up some gas, not on Viking, on Northern, but someone was releasing some capacity, and so it became available for, it was a permanent release, it became available. We had to have an answer basically within a 48-hour turnaround about whether we were going to take that capacity or some portion of it. It is very, very limited. The other issue in North Dakota is the location of the pipelines. There aren't a lot of pipelines with available capacity that cross the state in ways that make gas supply accessible to the unserved communities, right? When you have to pick up gas a long way away and run a pipeline to a community somewhere, especially a small community, you're putting in a lot of pipe. That's an expensive proposition. And so that adds to the cost, which means that even if you can pick up supply from somewhere, by the time you get it to the community you want to serve, it's not economically viable. And it's not just about the cost for running the pipe. The facilities are also incredibly expensive. The Alliance Pipeline is one that runs that some places in North Dakota could potentially be served off of. But the interconnect cost with Alliance is millions of dollars. And that makes projects to serve small communities not viable, you know, and the commission is certainly aware. I don't know how many people in the general public are aware that we can't simply increase prices just to make a project work, right? It's not like at the store, if there's a run on fancy tennis shoes or designer jeans or toilet paper and Pampers, the stores can jack up the prices if they want to and if they need to cover their costs. Utilities don't get to do that. So we have to operate within the confines of our tariff and the approval of the commission. So to when you look at the lack of supply and the location of the capacity and the cost of interconnects, all of that folds together to make supply very minimal in the state. Mm-hmm.
So to your supply agreement with Xcel, and I don't want to get into anything that you can't speak about publicly, but I have concerns about the, you know, competition for supply when there's a tight market or extreme weather, which we've seen. So are you pretty assured that your supply won't be gobbled up by a different Xcel priority should there be a run on gas, like in another repeat of some of the winter storms we've seen in the past, so that your customers will be protected?
Chair Grisman, Commissioner Fedorchik, yes, we are. Our agreement with Xcel has three components, which in general terms, as disclosed in our public-facing documents, have a firm capacity supply agreement, which is assured capacity. So Xcel would not have entered into that agreement if it was not also willing to assure us capacity as a firm customer. Then there's also an interruptible supply component that could be interrupted if it needed to be, but it's priced accordingly, and our plans incorporate that accordingly. And then DNG has committed to a certain minimum use level over the course of the agreements with Xcel. But because one of those components is firm supply, that was part of the contemplation of both companies in reaching this agreement. DNG had to be sure that we would have supply in difficult conditions, and Xcel had to be sure that it could commit to providing us supply just like it does to any other firm customer in those conditions. And so we don't have any concerns that supply will get snatched if we have a repeat of Winter Storm Uri or something like that.
Got it. Cool. I have a couple more questions, but if you guys want to jump in, then feel free.
Sherry?
No, go ahead, Al. It's not on this stuff.
So I do have kind of two, and maybe these are things that you don't want to or can't answer, but I'm just going to throw them out in your way. You said there's no impact on utilities, and by a technical definition, I would agree with you, but those of us in rural areas that rely on propane, or not just rural areas, towns like Larimore right now, that rely on propane, we kind of look at it as a utility. In the towns that you've developed already, have you had any observations? What's been the impact on those propane dealers who suddenly lose all their real close-by handy customers and a big amount of their business and are just left with their trucks and tanks to serve a few farmers who still desperately need them because you're not going there?
Thank you, Chair Chrisman. I can't tell you from a numbers perspective what the impact has been because I don't know that. But I know that we have a number of communities, both here in North Dakota and with our Minnesota affiliate companies, where natural gas and propane and other heating sources, electric, fuel oil, all coexist harmoniously. Yes, it's true that if people choose to convert, there can be an impact on propane dealers. We actually, on the Minnesota side, and as I discussed with the legislature, we've gotten propane dealers into the natural gas business, too, in some areas. So where they've wanted to get into the distribution business in communities, we've helped those propane dealers develop a natural gas distribution program. We've helped with the construction of their distribution line. We helped them get through the initial process of developing operations, and we help teach them how to do it. We supply the natural gas, and then they distribute it. So then they're actually serving all the same customers, and sometimes even some additional ones, some with propane, some with natural gas. Certainly, it can have an impact, and we don't deny that, but it is our goal to give residents the option to have another energy source if they want to. But nobody has to convert, right? Just because we go into a community doesn't mean that everybody in the community has to convert. So people who want to continue to use propane, who want to continue to support the propane dealers, can certainly do that. We just want to offer an additional option for the people who want to avail themselves of the benefits of natural gas. Yeah.
And I guess I worry, yes, they have that option. Maybe, say, a propane dealer, maybe 80 or 90% of their customers have that option and will likely take it. The other 10% might lose their propane dealer and now have to start paying someone to drive 100 miles to bring them propane. And they don't have the option. I fear that that handful could actually lose an option of a nearby dealer and now have to get propane from a distant dealer.
Chair Chrisman, I certainly that's a possibility, I suppose. I can't speak to the probability. I will say I have not personally heard about any propane dealers in the communities that we serve, either here or that our Minnesota affiliates serve, that have gone out of business once natural gas has been introduced into a community.
And that's encouraging.
It could have happened. I'm not saying that it hasn't, but I'd say I haven't heard about that. And as part of the leadership team with the communities, I think if it's, or with the companies, I think if our communities that we serve, if we had heard about it, I probably would have heard about that in a leadership team discussion at some point along the way. I've been with the Minnesota affiliate companies for 10 years, and of course I've been with DNG for the entirety of the time that it's been in existence. And I'm not aware of any that come to mind where the propane dealer has completely gone out of business and people have lost a dealer because of the introduction of natural gas.
Okay, and my other question, and I need just, I guess, clarification, and then from there it might be for Victor as much as you, but how did you put it? I gathered from you that most of this pipeline would be like in highway rights of way, so that, and thus you didn't need a lot of easements.
Yes.
Proper?
Yes, that's correct. Most of the line will run in the right-of-way of public roads. So whether it's a state highway, county highway, city road, township road, if it's a public road, by statute, utilities have the right to run an easement. So we still need to get approval from the communities, and that's why we go through the permit process for each respective stretch of road. But by statutory easement right for utilities, we can be in that roadway. On occasion, we have situations where we have a stretch of pipe that, for whatever reason, makes sense to run across private land. And so in those rare circumstances, then we approach the landowners for an easement that would allow us to run the line on their land. I'm not aware of any easements that are needed for this project, but once in a while, something develops. It might be that a large user wants, or even a small user, wants gas to go somewhere that isn't, it makes more sense to run a line directly than to run across a parcel directly or run around the edge of a private parcel rather than to work through what can sometimes be a maze of public roadways. And so in that type of instance, we might approach that owner and ask for an easement. And so sometimes that comes up, but I'm not aware of any for this project that have been identified already. And because I'm the legal girl, I'm also the write the easement girl, and I haven't been asked to draft any yet. I don't have any on my easement tracker for this project.
I'm going to follow up on that in a second. So is the distinction here that technical definition of utility? Because we do all these siting cases, and sometimes they struggle on easements. And it's like, oh, we can never put it in the right-of-way, in the road right-of-way. It has to be out there on that private land.
I don't know.
How is it that they can build them in the roads and these siting cases just can't seem to go there?
I think they could. in a lot of cases. I think they just don't want to, because you run a little bit more risk being closer to a right-of-way.
I know. That then is my subsequent question for you. The other reason that I've always heard that, and because this now didn't have to do with pipelines, this had to do with my old business of telecommunications lines. And we didn't want them in the road ditch because it seems like every few years they're doing something, upgrading the road, and now they need more fill because they're raising it or something. And it all gets torn out and you're stuck paying the bill. So have you experienced that as a problem in your other areas in Minnesota where you've been around longer? You put these things in the road ditch and then you end up standing the cost of removal and replacement if the road changes?
Chair Chrisman, on occasion, but it is not as common with natural gas, I don't think, as it is with telecom. And in a previous life, I too worked as general counsel for a telecom company. So I had regulatory and easement related discussions for telecom too. And certainly that can happen. That's part of the grant of the easement, right? That's part of what a public utility takes the risk with when we put something in a public right-of-way, is that if there is a road construction project that would require the gas line to move, we have to do that. And sometimes that happens. Generally, what we have found is that those aren't that common. They are not so common as to make projects not viable. It's still, from an economic standpoint, from a line design standpoint, for us, for distribution lines, makes more sense to run in the public right-of-way than it does for us to run across private land most of the time, which is why we design projects that way. And we know that that is something that we might have to encounter. And oftentimes, too, when there is a construction project that requires that, we're not talking about abandoning huge stretches of line and redoing huge stretches of line. There are pretty small areas. We've also found that generally when that happens, municipalities or counties or states are really pretty proactive about working with the utility providers, right? They put in design locates, we all go out there, they identify what's where, and they're pretty proactive about working with providers in terms of what makes the most sense for this. And no disrespect to all the telecoms out there, but I think the telecoms usually draw the short straw with respect to some of those kinds of things. You know, obviously, if they're located in the same corridor, it's going to affect all the utilities. Sometimes, at least in my experience with the telecom that I used to work with, we would locate sort of on the other side or out in a slightly different corridor. We might go on the other side of the right-of-way than where the gas or electrics and the waters were, just because it was easier install, things like that. So I think some of that can come into play, too. It depends on how crowded a corridor is.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair? Yeah, I just want to go off of a question that Randy asked and then you answered about having, you know, propane is in a community and you come with natural gas and people have a choice. What do you generally see? I mean, what percentage come over to, natural gas, in the communities that you've established, like in Drayton, Hillsboro, Mayville, Portland.
Thank you, Chair Chrisman. Commissioner Hagenhofer, we have actually been pleasantly surprised with the rate of conversion. It's been higher than what we originally anticipate in the North Dakota communities. We usually kind of plan these projects at around a 50% conversion rate early in the project. That conversion rate increases over time. Mm-hmm. That's not uncommon. Although, we will have a lot of signups early on, but sometimes not all those conversions happen in year one. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer for those conversions to happen. People want to use up the propane that's in their tank, or maybe what they need to do a conversion is delayed. Our most recent projects really had conversion delays because they were impacted by supply chain issues during the pandemic. And a lot of that has kind of worked its way out, but in some cases there are still some lingering supply chain issues on some things. But, I think generally we see 50 to 60% conversion over time, over the first handful of years in a project. Sometimes it can be a little higher than that. With residential customers, industrial customers are different, right? Mm-hmm. Business customers, a lot of the small businesses will convert at the same rate that residential customers do, but for some of the larger industrial customers, some convert right away, some don't, because it's a bigger task for them to convert, and so they stay with the system that they're using.
So would you say large industrial 50 or 40 or lower? Or?
You know, I apologize, I can't speak to that, but if you'd like the number, I certainly can make a supplemental submission based on what our experience has been. Usually, we have identified the larger customers when we do the project, because larger customers are what help make a project economically viable. And so we either secure them right away, like in this case, the school district, we hope to have the nursing home, we have a grain elevator, the city we expect to convert. Generally, we secure those customers right away because it is their commitment that helps bring natural gas to their communities. If they are not going to commit to doing it as larger users, the likelihood of a project being economically viable is significantly decreased. And so if there are larger customers, whether they're large commercial customers or more of an industrial load in a given community that tell us, nope, we're not going to commit to that, then we generally don't see them convert, right? Because we approach them up front to find out, are you coming with natural gas or are you not? And it would be, I think, much less common for a larger commercial user to convert at some point in the future because we talk to them in advance. That's part of what makes a project work.
Sure. Sure. On your application, the franchise authority, you indicated saying the city of Larimore anticipates awarding the franchise, and it was going to occur around September 5th, 2023. Did that happen?
Yes, it did. We filed in late August, and at the September 5th City Council meeting, the city of Larimore did go through the second reading of the franchise and approve it. So we have secured the franchise for the city of Larimore, and our villa is a township, and therefore no franchise is necessary.
And then just clarification, you're going to have, you have staff that will be at the Hillsboro Center, but and they're going to be responding to the Larimore?
Yes. Yep. We believe that our staff out of our Hillsboro Service Center will be able to effectively service the Larimore area for emergency basis. We also have staff in Drayton in the event of something big. And through trade organizations and agreements with other providers, we also are able to secure assistance from other natural gas utilities in the event of something major, and because of those mutual aid agreements, if it would become necessary to employ, we could certainly do that. But we believe, based on distance and design and location of our personnel, that we will be able to serve that area out of our Hillsboro Service Center.
Okay, thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay. One final question I had, Christine. Well, this is maybe for you, Victor. Looking at I'm assuming you've looked at the protected information.
Yes.
The trade secret stuff. And kind of scoured the financial statements, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have any concerns relating to the financials?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, good. Let's see. So we'll talk about some of the tariff things on the next case. I don't have any more questions on this one, do you guys? I think we can kind of go back and forth if we do have one.
Yeah, I think we left this open enough where we can talk about any of them without having to stop and redo recording. So.
But it is convenient if someone's looking for something in the recording to kind of stay in blocks, and I don't have anything more on this, do you?
No, I don't know.
Okay, so let's talk about the tariff.
So do you want to just kind of walk through your major tariff component that you're asking for, Christine. And
certainly.
And just to keep an eye on time for all of us, we have a 2:30, right? Is that at 2:30 or 3?
I was thinking it was 3.
Oh, maybe it's 3. Okay, sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. We're good.
It's 3.
Thank you. Commissioners, we are basically seeking 2 primary tariff modifications here, in addition to sort of the little nitpicky stuff like adding the service areas to our tariff. One is to establish a new rate zone. I guess we're really only seeking approval for one because we're not entirely sure we need approval for the other one, but we wanted to be transparent about it. So we're looking to establish a new rate zone for this area. And so this model of having a second rate zone would increase the rate slightly over our existing rate zone for areas in this second rate zone. And really, if you think about it sort of from the standpoint of when we came in with Drayton, when we came in for Drayton and we were a brand new company, we were going in to set up a service in an area that wasn't served, there was nothing to piggyback off of, we weren't able to look at kind of connecting things or doing things in a similar way. We had to look at that cost of service over 15 years, and so that's how the rates were set. And this is really sort of a very similar situation, right? We're going into a brand new area in a different modeling format, a different supply format. And so we have projected this and kind of laid out the cost of service over 15 years. With the 15-year ad valorem tax exemption that new systems have, it allows us to sort of minimize the rate impact a little bit because the 15-year period that this new rate zone will have that additional charge will run sort of simultaneously with the tax exemption. So then at 15 years, the taxes kick back in, but that rate adjustment comes out because we've costed the project. Then the other thing that we wanted to be transparent with the commission about is that we plan to continue doing our cost of gas, the same way that we do it, which is just cumulatively. Right now, when we do our cost of gas, it's the state as a whole. It's from all of our areas of supply. And we're planning to just wrap this into that as well. So it's not a change in how we do cost of service. And our cost of service has already been approved in an initial tariff, but we just wanted to be transparent about that.
Great. So personally, I think the way you're approaching it is appropriate to kind of tally up the cost of service for this area and come up with the rate for them and have that be, you know, distinct from your other areas, which had different costs. So I like that. It's also would be challenging to do it any other way with the tax rebate that applies only to this one versus the other one with the tax benefit. And I'm assuming you've sort of looked at and projected this price to the potential customers, and you feel like this is within the realms of tolerance for them to afford to support the build-up.
Chair Christman, Commissioner Fedorchuk, yes, we have talked about rates. We've had meetings with the people in Larimore. Our president, Cody Chilson, and our CEO, Greg Palmer, have been out and discussed things with the community. Certainly when we've talked with the larger customers about potential minimum use agreements, they're aware of what the rates are going to be because they're considering those agreements. We've talked with members of the community because that's all part of gauging interest, right? Mm-hmm. It isn't sufficient to just say, would you like us to bring natural gas? You know, because I would love it if somebody said to me, would you like to go to Tahiti? I'll say, sign me up. But it's when they say, well, this is what it's going to cost you, that really impacts the decision. So these rates have been discussed with the people of Larimore and our villa, and well, it's not going to send me to Tahiti. They're perfectly comfortable with where the rates are and what the model is on that.
Okay. Yeah, this is a really great case study for that tax. You know, so it'll be hopefully Victor's going to talk to you about this legislative council meeting that's coming up, because they ought to hear how that work is playing out with the case right before us right now.
Thank you.
The numbers, you know, just like it's an offset to how much you would have probably had to add on to justify to pay for the build out, and that might have been a deterrent to the locals to the point where they wouldn't have been able to do it. So.
Yeah, Chair Crisman, Commissioner Fedorchuk, yes, exactly. We think this is an excellent case study. And in fact, in committee testimony on House Bill 1170, which ultimately became the exemption law, I was asked in both committees, where are you going to go? And in both of those committees, we said we've had requests from all over the state, but the area that we think is the most viable to test this out and try it is the Larimore area. And I was telling those committees that earlier this year. And I have subsequently, after the filing here, reached out to all of the sponsors of the bill and all of the legislators that testified in favor of it and said, I just want to let you know that support that you gave is really having an impact. We're going. I'll be at the commission on Wednesday to look at discussing this with them, because they're looking at Larimore and Arvilla. You know, and Greg Palmer has always said about our companies, we say what we're going to do, and then we do what we said we were going to do. And we said, if we can make this tax exemption work and we can start knocking off those other dominoes, finding the gas supply, figuring out how to make the rates work, we would be working to bring natural gas. Because of that, we thought long and hard about what the best approach from a rate perspective was, and we believe that setting up rate zones like this, when you go to a completely new area, to set up a separate rate zone like this makes the most sense for a couple of reasons. One, like you pointed out, it's difficult to talk about combinations when we have tax exemptions that are only going to apply in new areas and not existing areas. And then as we go forward, you know, in a new area, you'll have 15 years, but the clock will already be ticking in Larimore and Arvilla, and then in the same in the next one. And two, because of the way, for our business, the way we model our financials and look at a project, and we look at these 15-year periods, it makes sense to have a rate zone factored in over that 15 years for that area. So this is a model that we think will work for our company to look at other communities as well. And so this is something that I think we'll come back to you with in future in various iterations as we look to continue to expand natural gas to the communities where we can make it work. And then if we ever get lucky enough pulling together that Trans-Dakota pipeline actually works, that'll open up a whole host of new communities. And I do hope to participate in the interim energy committee's study. We testified in favor of the bill for the study to bring natural gas to unserved communities, and we've offered to provide information and participate in any way that we can. Mr. Shook and I were talking about that before the hearing, so we're certainly hopeful. I think that because this is our niche and this is what we do, we'd have really good information about what it's going to take to make it work.
Did you look at other options? Like what are the potential downsides to this way of doing the tariff that just we might be aware of, if there are any, or other potential ways that you looked at doing it and chose not to for whatever reasons?
Chair Crisman, Commissioner Fedorchuk, I think, you know, really the only two ways to look at it are you wrap everybody into the same rate zone, which then results in really strange rate impacts, or you do it this way. And we couldn't find any other viable way that made sense and that would work. I mean, I suppose in theory, another way you look at it is without having to have a change in the rate, a new rate zone that has a little bit of an increase, but that doesn't make it viable. Right. Mm-hmm. So we have to cover the cost of service. And the way to do that for a project like this is with a new rate zone. And that's really the only viable option we found.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I don't have any more to know.
To be clear, by contrast, the Hillsborough and Mayville development did get wrapped up into the Drayton rate zone, and then Portland, that development got wrapped up into that one too, right?
Yes, that's those four communities are all part of that, what we know we now call rate zone one. It was the initial rate zone, but we now call that rate zone one. And so if there were more dominoes to fall in that geographic area and we were able to, you know, serve some of the additional communities around there, they would likely also fall into that rate zone one. Similarly, if the system in Larimore and Arvilla branches a little bit in nearby areas, you know, we can't predict the future, but I would say it's probably pretty likely that they fall into that same rate zone. And if they don't, we would have an explanation as to why. And if we go serve in a completely new geographic area, we would likely come back and ask for a third rate zone, sure. Right? So that's sort of the model that we envision in the future. And you never know exactly what's going to happen because none of us can predict the future. And if we would, I expect that five or six of us in the room might walk out with Powerball numbers tonight that we'd be sharing, you know, $1.7 billion. But and that would pay for my trip to Tahiti and the gas to Larimore and Arvilla. But we can't predict the future. So that's how we project these rate zones working in the future. But that's all it is at this time is what our expectation is.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I remembered that correctly. I don't have any other questions. Do you share?
No, you guys clarified the questions I had. But just if we could predict the future, how about we just go to Vegas?
That works too.
Not warm enough.
I'm in agreement with it, this methodology for the tariff. It's slightly different, but it's very similar to what we've seen in other instances. If we think about MDU's Gwinner Pipeline extension, there's a surcharge for those customers who have gone to that pipeline extension because it didn't quite cost out like the rest of the system. So it works out pretty well.
Yeah.
So I like this methodology.
So then if that's the direction we go and we do that, does the order need to do anything to acknowledge that, well, that's going to be separate, the cost of gas component is going to be blended?
No, the cost of gas component is covered within the language of the tariff, and that's consistent between the two. Okay. So we don't need to call it out separately.
Okay.
I don't have any other questions on the tariff issues.
No, and just to clarify, we did get the letter of support. It has been received.
Good. Mm-hmm. That speaks to the need, in my opinion.
And then, did we need to do anything at all with the jurisdictional determination?
No, I was hoping Jack was maybe paying attention and would pop in here. I was told by him he was going to be working on that piece of it, and I just have not heard if he's done anything.
Since we're scheduled for a 30-second pause... Anyway, would you want to
have over
Certainly.
30 seconds.
How about a minute 30?
Skip it.
Just now, by chance.
I like the mayor's words and some enthusiastic support.
Oh, these small towns are so eager for this service. When we have so much natural gas in the state. Yeah. Oh. Well, I would expect, since he's not here and he knows about this, that he has plans to wrap it up on his own.
That would be my assumption as well. I've had a discussion with him about it. I know he's thinking this is kind of brushing up against the line of jurisdictional, not jurisdictional, but we'll... He can work that out between him, myself, and Christine.
Okay.
Okay.
So, anything else that you're missing? Are there any objections to the evidence produced today? So you didn't turn in anything on paper. So it'd be the recording becoming part of the official record?
No objection.
Okay. So the evidence today will become part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record?
Nothing from BNG.
Okay. Seeing none, this informal hearing is closed. Thank you.
Thank you.